This edition of the Crunch Zone is brought to you by the O-Line Sports Grill. O-Line is on the front line of Cardinal sports. Come in for wings, happy hour, and $3.99 burgers every Tuesday. It's a sports fan's dream. At the corner of Westport Road and Hurstburn Lane, see the menu online at olinegrill.com and text CRUNCH to 72727 for a buy one, get one free entree.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
You are now listening to The Crunch Zone, broadcasting live from the Louisville.am podcast studio. I am Mike Lindsay, also known as Crumbs Revenge. We've got a great show for you planned today. We're going to interview Paul Rogers, the voice of the Cards, and he's going to tell us about his life in broadcasting, and we'll learn a little bit about him, as well as Jonathan Blue from Blue Equity Group, and he's going to talk about his relationship with the University of Louisville, the city itself, and some of the fun travels he's had with Rick Pitino this summer. This is the Crunch Zone, and it's coming at you right now.
One on one.
Paul Rogers sitting in the studio. This is awesome. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. It's an exciting time of year. Always, I think everybody's ready to get going.
Yeah, and I think yesterday at Fan Day, there was a ton of interest going on. It was awfully hot.
You know, it felt hot because I don't think we've had that much hot weather to get accustomed to this year. I mean, really, it was an okay day, but I'm with you. I was standing there thinking, man, it's hot out here. And then I thought, no, it's really not.
Yeah, and
we had a really good summer from that regard.
I think the rubber field, and maybe there's not as much breeze. I think the whole thing, I think it really is the oven.
Yeah.
I think it's aptly named.
Oven, yep.
Well, there's a lot of questions, myself and Cards fans. Everybody would love to learn about the voice of the Cards. And I understand you've hit quite an achievement milestone at work, 40 years.
Yeah, actually, it kind of sprung up on me. I hadn't thought that much about it, and it just kind of hit me Saturday because August 17th was my anniversary date, which was Saturday, and I went, oh, my gosh, it's been 40 years. So it's been a long, great ride, and, you know, who could ask for anything more, especially the way this past year has gone.
Yeah, and you ever think about retirement?
I am beginning to think about it. Not that.
By the
I'm
way,
about
Cards
to.
Fans do not accept.
not that I'm about to, but the thought, the planning for it has occurred to me. You know, am I financially okay? Do I really want to ever give this up? And the answer right now is probably not. But yeah, either that point will come at some time. But like, I guess we'll all figure out when it gets here.
All right. Well, let's rewind back. Now you're getting hired by Kaywood Ledford. And he's a legend. You're a legend now. But back then, you were just coming right out of school. He's the legend.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of stories maybe you learned from him. Anything
I learned,
that
I learned so much from him. I learned a lot from him without even knowing it, just as a kid growing up listening to him. I got to know him a little bit during college while I was at UK. He even critiqued a few tapes for me. I'm sure neither of us ever envisioning what would happen from there. But anyway, they had an opening in the summer, at the end of the summer of 1973, and I applied for it and spoke to him, and I thought that was that, and a couple of days later, the phone rang, and it was him, and I always remember this. His exact words were, boy, you have really, left him a tape. He said, you have really improved, and I went, ooh, okay, thanks, and he said, can you come see me? I said, sure, so I went down, I think it was the next day, and he just started talking about all the things we were going to do, and he wanted me to do. And finally, I said, "So, am I hired?" I said, yeah. So that
part of this
that.
Conversation was left out, Kaywood.
Yeah. So, boy, we went on from there, and he was such a great friend, mentor, boss, companion, peer—you name it—and learned a lot from him. And hopefully, have continued a great tradition at WHAS.
Well, I know he's had the highest respect. In media, for sure. Mm-hmm. I know the UK fans loved him.
He was a professional and a real gentleman. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, football season's here.
Is
so,
it?
Yeah, that's right, by the way. And, you know, a lot of people here you call games, but you don't just show up and call the games. I mean, there's a lot of prep work involved. Tell us a little bit about what do you do to get ready for the season and maybe a little bit of what you do before each game.
Some of the secrets
to success. Yeah. We need the secrets here.
I do a lot of what all fans do. I mean, I just read and watch and just kind of absorb as much as I can. Then when you get into, say, the week of the game, that's when I get into my particulars, which Really, a lot of the work goes into the pregame. We do a 90-minute pregame. Once the game gets going, everything's happening. That's easy. Mm-hmm. But the pregame involves a lot of preparations and interviews and editing and so on. And then probably the single most time-consuming thing is just learning names and numbers. Obviously for the opponent, not so much with Louisville. This year's team has so many guys coming back. I mean, there will be some newcomers sprinkled in there, but you know most of the key players. But then it's learning the opponent. I guess all play-by-play guys, all of them I know of, have a chart that you make. To me, it's just a little diagram of an offense and a defense, and I'll have Louisville's offense on one side going against the opponent's defense, and it's a chart that you have during the game to refer to, although for me it's probably more of a learning tool during the week. I use that to learn the names and numbers. When the game gets going, hopefully I've committed them pretty much to memory, but it's there for me to refer to if I need it. And we all have our little nuances. For me, I write a few key stats, maybe a couple of biographical notes if there's something of particular interest, and just kind of spend the week getting as familiar as I can. Frankly, once you get into the season and you know Louisville, most of the prep time really is spent on learning the opponent. But this time of year, all through the summer and everything, it's learning everything you can about the Cardinals.
Is there, let's say, what's one of the biggest challenges? Like, you're calling a game. What is that something you fear the most going wrong in the broadcast, or that is always a challenge game by game in a broadcast?
The two things would be, A, from a technical standpoint, and thankfully it wasn't always this way, but now we do have an engineer there, and that's his worry. I used to have to do both, and that could really be stressful. Now, if there is an issue, not that I don't care, but there's nothing I can do about it, so I just get out of the way and let him deal with that. So that's the first thing, is are we on the air?
Yeah.
The only thing beyond that is really just trying to make sure that you stay composed when things go crazy. And the only reason for that, frankly, is just because there are people listening to you who want to know what's going on. And if I'm sitting there totally confused, it's only going to confuse them.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just trying to make sure I'm as tuned in and alert to what is going on as possible. Occasionally, there'll be a quirky play that has some obscure rule that maybe you're unaware of, and in that case, you really just have to kind of be forthright and say, "I'm sorry, I'm not sure here."
Yeah.
But you can't fake it. I
think I remember in the basketball game that you and Bob were trying to figure out what was going on with Kevin Ware for a while because
mm-hmm.
you didn't have
yeah.
ever he was kind of covered and you couldn't quite
you,
see and
couldn't tell. We were both on the other side of the floor from him, and I remember when the shot went up, I followed the ball. I didn't see him actually land and go down, and all of a sudden as the players start down court and the play stopped and you're going, "What?" And then you looked across the floor and you saw people crowded around Kevin. It was one of those things, just like most fans, that piece by piece you began to put it together and you figured out what had happened.
Have you ever had the moment where the opponent, maybe it's a little used guy, score, you're sitting so high up in a football booth you can barely read his number?
Mm-hmm. That's actually, going back to your original question, that's the other main concern, is there are some stadiums where the sight lines are not as good. And that can cause you some discomfort. I remember when we played Rutgers last year, not that we can't see that well, but they had these really, I don't remember them, they had these new uniforms that were, I think they were red numbers on black shirts outlined in silver or something weird.
Yeah, the family, the jersey with family written on
yeah,
the back.
But you could not read numbers. And occasionally you get some places where you're way down in an end zone or way high, and it's just hard to pick up numbers on occasion. But that's, you live with it. You do the best you can. There's nothing you can do about that.
How does basketball, like, is there any difference as far as the concerns or stress that of things going wrong in a basketball game versus a football? Or is there anything that's like, oh, it's basketball season and now I have to start doing stuff like this?
The difference, the essential prep is the same. The difference is obviously you don't have near as many players to learn. And especially when you get into conference season, you know everybody. As far as learning teams, that just happens as you go through the year because you see the teams on TV so much, as it was in the Big East, will be in the ACC. So there's probably not as much prep time per game, but you have more games.
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of evens out. Basketball, I don't want to say it's necessarily easy, but it's the most rhythmic sport to do. It just has a great flow to it, unless there's too many fouls called or something.
Okay.
But basketball is a game that does kind of flow, that's fun to get into when you really get on a run.
But you still have your pregame, right?
Still 90 minutes.
So you're just compressed less time in between building them.
Yeah, exactly. You're talking about, what, with exhibitions and tournaments, maybe 40 90-minute pregames that you have to do.
All right, let's see here. I used to teach tennis, okay, and I used to talk in a big warehouse, and I talked to 40 people, and everyone kind of joked around and called it my big voice. And when I'm drinking, my big voice turns into what they call the wrestling voice. Yeah. So are you ever at home, and does your wife ever call you out like you're like,
turn
the
off
steak
your
was delicious, but folks, we need to work on the green beans.
Not an ordinary conversation necessarily. I think what apparently when I'm in a noisy kind of place and I start sort of using, I guess, my projecting voice, and I'll get a nudge occasionally to tone it down.
It's a real thing.
But yeah, it's not that we're trying to put on a broadcast voice, but there is, you know, you do have to project to a certain degree. You're talking over loud crowds, and you want to be heard without screaming. At least I do. That's one thing I despise is screaming announcers, although we've all been guilty on occasion.
Come on, Russ. I think that was the line.
Yeah. Come on, Russ. But there's a certain, I think, inflection and control you try to have of your voice.
What does Paul do when he's not broadcasting?
Play golf.
Leisure Paul is playing golf.
My summer has been a blast playing golf. I love to play golf in the summertime. It's my primary leisure activity. In the summer, thanks to my early morning schedule, during the summer when I don't have a ball game to be preparing for, I do have a lot of free time. I'm off work at 9 in the morning, and so I get out to the golf course frequently. It's a passion of mine. Not that I'm especially good at it. Actually, my handicap's down to 14 right now, which is
well,
as it's been.
Much better than mine.
And that's my main thing. I mean, family, I got grandkids. Well, I love to spend time with them, and we have our little fun things we do together. But I love to go out to dinner. We'll take an occasional little trip here and there. We don't travel a lot in the summer. I get enough of that in the year. But we usually try to, my wife and I, take, you know, one getaway trip each year. Just kind of what most people do.
And I know you cover some horse racing. Are you a big fan of it, or just in season, part of the job, and that's enough to kind of quench your excitement for horse racing?
I am a fan of racing. That's probably really my other passion. I'm not as involved in it as I used to be because the station no longer broadcasts the feature race of the day. So I don't go to the track every day like I used to. But I do, I will confess, wager on probably a race or two a day. And it's double intent is it's fun. I enjoy it. It's not big bucks. It's sort of for entertainment purposes.
Like half the retirement dollars.
But it keeps me connected, too. It just kind of keeps me in the loop on the up-and-coming horses, whether it's a Breeders' Cup or a Derby or whatever. So I do enjoy thoroughbred racing a lot.
Were you disappointed in Bettino's horse this year?
Or
was it really – or do you think maybe the hype was a little too much?
No, I like the horse, and I think I did pick him in my exotics, you know, in my top four or so. I wasn't real keen on him winning the race. You know, it's hard to say you're disappointed. I mean, to get a horse that good, to have that kind of chance. And I think in all honesty, I'm not sure Rook was disappointed. It was exciting. It was thrilling. Yeah, you'd love to win it, but when you don't, you just kind of shrug it off. That's racing.
And I would say probably he was all stocked up on good news at that point,
yeah,
regardless.
he had a little cushion for a misfire.
This edition of the Crunch Zone is brought to you by the O-Line Sports Grill. O-Line is on the front line of Cardinal sports. Come in for wings, happy hour, and $3.99 burgers every Tuesday. It's a sports fan's dream. At the corner of Westport Road and Hurstburn Lane, see the menu online at olinegrill.com and text CRUNCH to 72727 for a buy one, get one free entree. Is there anything funny that's happened in the broadcast? Like you and Bob, you're calling a game, or you and Doug, you know, or just over the years, mic's not on, so-and-so's not back from the bathroom. I mean, just who knows what can happen.
Little things. I can't even remember specifics, but yeah, we've had funny little things happen. Everybody does. Most of them, you know, not that outlandish or crazy. We've all had those times when we just, sorry, I got to take a bathroom break. The Notre Dame 5 overtime game this year, for one of the few times at halftime, I decided I don't need a bathroom break. I'm feeling pretty good. Well, we have no provisions for commercials and overtimes. So I went the whole second half and 5 overtimes, the whole game.
Gosh.
Starting with an hour and a half pregame, a whole game, 5 overtimes with no
bathroom break. Worst decision ever.
That was getting a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. I can't imagine picking a worse game this year.
Yep. You never know.
What about best interview? Like, you've interviewed so many coaches, so many players. What are some people that were just really entertaining for whatever reason?
I'll always give Howard Schnellenberger a ton of credit, because not only did I do, you know, pre-games, talk shows and the like with him, but we actually, for a few years there, did a daily interview show. Now, I would go over, like, on Sunday and record two or three, and then go back on Wednesday and record two or three. So, like, we had to get together every day.
Wow.
But I never did an interview with him that he blew it off. He always would come up with something interesting to say. That's everybody knows Howard knows that. So I always really enjoyed talking to him. But really, all the coaches have been cooperative and fun. Patino can be most of the time he's a lot of fun. After losses, not so much so. But yeah, he'll kind of keep you on your toes. He'll throw something back at you in good humor sometimes.
I remember being in the Syracuse after the loss at home last year in basketball, and there was some wrath of Patino going on.
Yes, there was. He was actually pretty civil by the time he got to me. I think he'd cooled down.
Really?
A little bit. But I've really been lucky. All the coaches I've worked with, for the most part, have been very cooperative and given me their time and have been – the most fun coach was John L. That guy was just a peach of a guy. You don't know any – don't talk to anybody who didn't love hanging around John L.
Now, is there any coach that held it closer to the vest compared to the rest?
The current one.
Really?
I think the world of Charlie. I think he's a whale of a coach. I think he's a wonderful human being, but he is very close-mouthed, as I think all of us know, when it comes to the media. He just doesn't let you know much.
Yeah. And I understand everyone's got their different strategies for how much information I'm getting out and will it work against me and stuff like that.
You guys have spoiled it all. All you internet people came in, and now they didn't know who to trust anymore.
That's right. That's right. Well, good. Full transparency. That's what we're looking for. How about players? Just any player? I mean, 40 years. You're talking about a long time here.
I always hate getting into this because you'll either forget somebody or just neglect somebody.
And we'll just record another podcast. Yeah. We'll get it next time.
I could name them. Going back forever. Actually, on the way over here today, I was thinking, now who's going to come up that I need to talk about? And I go back to Bridgman and Murphy and Griffith and that far back. And every era has had the really good players of the more recent brand. Preston Knowles was a real favorite of mine. Who doesn't love Peyton Siva or this whole current group as a group is probably as likable a bunch as ever been around here. Football wise, I don't get to know as many football players as well as basketball players because basketball is just so much more intimate. It's fewer people. There's more travel. I spend more time with them. But over the years, I've gotten to know many of the football players and all of the quarterbacks who obviously you end up talking to the most have been really good guys to talk to and to later hopefully be friends with. Chris Redman ranking right up there. Chris and I played golf together a number of times. Dave Ragone. Stephon LaFors, who went on to be my partner for a couple of years before going back into coaching, or a year. I think he just did a year. But and there are things that, to be honest with you, I think a lot of times the players don't necessarily pick up on who we all are until it's over, and then you kind of become friends with them later on, if not during.
I can see that happening. So players, coaches, you've seen a lot of changes too. I mean, we're not going to get into – the three-point line was installed and stuff like that. But you've seen a lot of changes in basketball and football. Is there anything today that you see that's like, man, that's a lot different than it was decades ago?
Certainly in basketball, the style of play, how physical it's become. Football, probably the speed of the game. And just in an overall sense, in all college sports, just the bigness. I mean, how corporate, how big business it has become, and especially here because, Louisville is like the NBA or the NFL franchise in this town. Mm-hmm. It takes the big dollars. It gets all the attention, the luxury boxes, the corporate support, you name it, and it's just all gotten so big. The media coverage. I mean, there's way, way more people covering Louisville now than there was years ago.
I'm assuming you called the Louisville-Texas game under Howard Schnellenberger.
I did.
41-10.
Mm-hmm.
Was that just as exciting as covering the Sugar Bowl? I mean, that was such a big, big win at that time.
When I think back over the years, there's the obvious games, the national championship game, the BCS bowl games, all of those landmark wins. But the games along the way that got you there are so special that maybe you don't recollect them as readily, but when you do, you go, oh, yeah, how about that one? And the Texas game you mentioned, Louisville had back-to-back wins at the old Cardinal Stadium over Texas and Arizona State. Two very good teams. I mean, they pummeled them. And that crowd, when that place was loud, that noise got to bouncing off the roof, and that old rickety place got to shaking. And
the redirect.
Those were great, yeah. Those were some great times, those wins along the way. During that time, now Louisville didn't win these games, but they were very competitive in some great football environments like Ohio State. We went there twice, went to Texas A&M twice, had some games with West Virginia way back then when they were above Louisville in terms of a football program that were very exciting games. So, yeah, there's been a lot of great games along the way that maybe aren't the postseason tournament or the bowl games, but memorable games nonetheless.
Is there anything you fear for the Louisville program in the new landscape? I mean, we landed in the ACC, so that obviously is going to be, you know, a huge help.
Yeah.
But you can still see the bias, and you can still see there's a certain group trying to control the rest of the groups.
I think, however this whole thing shakes out, if there's more to come, I think Louisville's awfully solid right now. And Tom Jurich is a big reason for that. He's positioned the program to where it's just so strong in all sports that people want Louisville to be a part of whatever group they're in. I'm not really worried about anything in particular. I hope, I think we all wish we could be in the ACC this year because, let's face it, this is the year Louisville is built to have its best team. Next year, they're, in all reality, probably not going to be as good as this year. They're still going to be solid, and I think they're going to be good in years to come. But, boy, wouldn't this be a great year to go to the ACC instead of next year? So If I have any concerns, I guess it would be that people don't suddenly expect that we're going to win national championships and bowl games every single year, and then your first year in the ACC, maybe that doesn't happen. You think, oh, gosh, you know, we're in over our heads, or we're not as good as we thought we were. And I don't think that would be the case, but – you need a dose of reality every now and then. What we did last year was, we all know how unique it was. And Louisville could even arguably be every bit as good or better in both football and basketball this year and not win a BCS bowl game and a national championship.
Yeah.
That's just a ridiculous achievement.
Yeah, and Louisville's had, you know, they've pretty much won almost every conference they go to, but not right away. I remember when we switched from CUSA in basketball, and we brought over some pretty good players. I think Padgett was even on the team, maybe. But that first year, the Big East, we were almost not qualifying for the tournament because the bottom four, I think, or the bottom two at that time.
That was obviously after the 2005 Final Four, and we went into the Big East, and it was kind of a struggle that first year in basketball. We did okay in football right from the start. But, yeah, it took a little growing into. And there may be a little of that in the ACC, but I don't think to any great degree.
All right, let's get you in trouble now. You have one game, and this basketball game is going to provide your retirement. Who's your coach? You didn't call any games under Hickman, right?
No.
Okay, because I know that was –
I didn't know Peck. He was a peach of a guy.
Okay.
No, I did not do
it. We'll include him because he did have Wes Unseld. That's not bad. It doesn't necessarily mean the teams, but you got one coach. And he's coaching the game that will win you a retirement prize.
Oh, man. How can you put me under this situation?
You're going to Turtle Bay in Hawaii to play golf every day as part of that package.
I'm going with the current guy.
All right.
I mean, I've always thought Rick got a little bit of a bad rap of, you know, I mean, we all know Denny was the master of the late game draw up a play. But I think Rick got a little bit of a bad rap in some things that have happened along the way. But in recent years, they've been pretty darn good in close games.
I honestly think this is Rick's best years.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I would agree.
I mean, better than even at UK because when he built up, I mean, now had he stayed, maybe that would be not true. But for what he has built up there, I would say he's not only – he has all of that he built up at UK, but I think he has the wisdom of years where his approach to life and the kids and what the kids are getting from him, not just from basketball, is better.
Yeah.
Than it was at UK, where he was probably just career-driven only.
I would agree. And when he got that 2003 Kentucky team to the Final Four, I was not yet doing Louisville's basketball play-by-play in those years, so I saw them a lot. And I just watched them, and I saw what he was doing. I said, you know what? He's going to have Kentucky a Final Four contender every single year. And they were from that point on.
And as a fan, I hated that.
And I think a lot of people thought he would come to Louisville and immediately do the same thing. Well, it's taken a while, but I think he now has Louisville at that point, too. Louisville is a Duke, a Kansas, North Carolina, you name it. They're going to be a team that year in and year out now is always going to be considered a Final Four contender.
And that success, you know, has some good to it. So when Louisville upset Kentucky when they were ranked like number three with Samaki Walker's triple-double and DeJuan Wheat, we wouldn't have enjoyed that unless we hated Rick so much at that time.
Sure. You got to have somebody you love to hate.
All right. Part two, football. Who's coaching your team?
Well.
And by the way, in my opinion, most of these coaches are pretty 1-1A. You know, there's a couple that you can say, maybe not Ron Cooper. Cragthorpe wasn't too successful. But the top coaches you're picking from, I think that's kind of a hard pick. But I'm going to make you pick.
I'll say this. I'm not sure that Charlie has totally – he hadn't passed the longevity test yet on what he's going to do year after year in various situations. So if I don't pick him, that's why. So I'd probably go to Petrino. I mean, you talk to any player who played for Bobby Petrino, and they'll tell you, going into the game, we knew we were going to win because we knew we were so prepared for anything and everything, and it didn't always happen. But they felt that way. I mean, they felt there was nothing they were going to see that they didn't know how to contend with, and there were many times he'd come up with a play this week and said, we're going to run this play, let's go score a touchdown, and score a touchdown. Yeah. Remember in the Orange Bowl when they threw the wide receiver pass
Patrick
for a touchdown?
Carter.
Patrick Carter threw it to who? Did he throw it
I
to
think
who?
It was Anthony Allen.
But anyway, when they threw that
pass. Well, it was Brohm to Carter on the wing.
Exactly.
Carter to the near the end zone.
They had been practicing. This was back when I used to be able to go to practice, by the way. They had been practicing that play all year long, and I was waiting for it every game. And they just sat on it and sat on it and sat on it, and they finally pulled that dang thing out in the Orange Bowl.
That's great.
And that's, you know, not that other teams don't come up with special plays too, but that's just kind of an example of how thoroughly prepared they were and would be ready for things offensively and defensively. The thing with trick plays is always, do you keep it in hiding and run it once, or do you throw it out there to give teams more stuff to worry about? And, you know, either option works, but in this case, it was a total surprise attack.
All right, well, I've got 10 questions for you. I like to end each interview with 10 questions. Are you ready for it?
Shoot.
All right, let's get to it.
10 questions.
Beer, bourbon, or wine?
That's a tough question because I'm
they're all delicious.
I'm late on a bourbon kick. Okay. So, I've never been a big beer drinker. I love a beer if it's hot and I'm thirsty. I used to drink a fair amount of wine, meaning, you know, a wine frequently.
Sure. Complete wino. Like, they'd pick you up off the streets and bring you to the broadcast.
Now I'm more so of a bourbon guy. I do enjoy a bourbon and Coke.
Okay. Favorite bourbon?
Probably Maker's Mark.
Okay. Is it straight out of the Rick Pitino bottle? Have you already cracked that one open?
No, that'll save as a souvenir.
All right. Favorite team not named Louisville? That could be pro or college. Doesn't matter.
As a kid, I was a Reds fan. I'm not so much anymore. I've never been a big football fan, so I'm going to have to go with Holy Trinity because my grandson plays football there.
All right, nice. By the way, alumni right here. And when I played football, I kept running into the quarterback. They tried me as a running back, and I'd always run right into the quarterback. I'm sure there's a lot of highlights of me playing third-grade football. Favorite place to eat? You mentioned you like going out to restaurants. Well, I know you'll probably eat a lot of places, but where's kind of like one of your spots?
Kind of depends on my mood, but I really enjoy the atmosphere of Jeff Ruby's, especially after ball games. It's a fun place to go hang out.
Jeff Ruby's a good place. Cardinal moment. Favorite Cardinal moment in 40 years. In 40 years of Cardinal moments, you've seen them all.
I'll have to bail out and take the easy one. That'd be winning the national championship this year.
This one?
Yeah.
Over 80 and 86?
Well, I wasn't calling the games
then, so
I'm going to limit it to that and say, the championship this year.
And you obviously, not just the title, but a lot of special moments along the way.
Yeah,
so.
Sure.
So I can see that. All right, what's the darkest skeleton in your closet that if anyone knew you'd be fired on the spot? Or,
yeah, give me a choice.
Or you can pick favorite Cardinal player, any sport, 40 years worth.
I'll skip the skeleton in the closet.
All right, he's going.
I don't have anything.
Option two.
About, but, wow. Who am I going to pick?
Maybe they were really good athletically. Maybe they're really good personality.
Yeah,
it's not fair. We'll do another podcast.
We'll just
throw one out.
I'm gonna throw out Chris Redmond just because he's a guy I knew in high school, knew in college, still know, still am around from time to time. He's such a cool guy, and in fact, a buddy of mine does the Atlanta Falcons games, and I saw him this summer at an event, and we were just talking about a lot of stuff, and Chris came up, and he said people in Atlanta just love Chris because that's Chris. He's so classy, the way he handled everything in Atlanta, and so there you go.
All right. We'll take it. Chris Redman. Favorite podcast host? Tread lightly. That's a great answer.
You're my favorite video guy, too.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I've got one this week, coming out this week for preseason football. It's last week because this is next week's podcast. Okay, yeah. So I hope you all liked it.
Yeah.
And there's a little surprise, folks. Did you enjoy Paul Rogers in it? Paul, you did an awesome job.
Those they're fun for me to watch. Yeah. I mean, I loved the basketball videos from the tournament that you put together that had Bob and me with the TV video. It's
everybody loved those.
And I mean, I use it for critique purposes. You know, am I correct here? Am I calling the right spot? Am I on top of things? And anyway, those are fun for me to watch.
I know I tweeted out for people to ask some questions, and one of them was, are they ever going to put out a Blu-ray broadcast of the championship game with just Paul and Bob's voices?
Believe me, I have tried to get that done, and I, for some reason, can't seem to get the ball moving on that. I don't know a good reason why. I wish I could.
All right. How about what was the most fun UofL team calling a game for? All right, so there's been successful teams that were just grinded out and they were slow, but they were very successful. There's been teams that were really wild and exciting, but then maybe they didn't win a lot of games. So is there one team that and this year is going to be up there?
Right.
So I'm gonna take away this year's team.
Okay.
Because that's a good answer. That they're real fun.
Yeah.
There was a lot of drama. They fought so hard to make so many comebacks. What would be number two?
You know, I might go back to that 11 team, the one that was upset by Moorhead in the first round of the tournament, because that was the first year of the Yum Center. That was kind of the first year of Rick beginning to formulate his plan of how he wanted to rebrand his teams and get them to play. And they had the Miracle on Main that year. And I mentioned Preston Knowles as among my all-time favorites. And they were a fun bunch of guys to be around. I anytime you follow a team, you pull for them. But there's a certain amount of objectivity you maintain because, you, as I said, you want to tell what's happening without getting too emotional. That tore me up when they lost the Moorhead game. Bob and I had a hard time getting through that post game. They were a real likable bunch of guys, so I'll rank them up there.
And they were winning, I believe, you know, narrowly when Preston got hurt.
Mm-hmm. They had been in a tough fight all the way, finally opened up an 8-point lead with, I forget, 6 minutes to go, something like that, and you kind of thought, okay, we weathered the storm. And I think it was right after that Preston got hurt, and then they came back on it and just it was just excruciating. And I'll add this. After the game, I ran into Preston back at the hotel, and I knew he had to be crushed. But I just went up and talked to him for a minute and tell him how much I appreciated what he'd done and enjoyed watching him play. And he would not stop talking about how indebted he was and how grateful he was to Rick Pitino for taking him, making him a man, teaching him things. And, I mean, it's the kind of thing that you want people to know, because while basketball is maybe 1 and 1A, it's not everything. But these guys do learn about life, and Rick is big on teaching them about life, and they learn the lessons. And I was really struck by those comments he made, and it made things a little bit easier to swallow, too.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of the reasons why you're the voice of the Cards, because, you know, you have an ability to just connect with people and talk with them on a personal level. And, you know, you can have people that might be a great game caster, but they're maybe a so-so person. So we wouldn't hear stories like that. Conversations like that wouldn't have. And I think that really adds to a depth of everything that you're doing.
That's good. I appreciate that. And it's been fun for me.
Favorite movie?
Back to the Future.
Left Field. Really?
Yes. Love that movie.
Do you still watch it?
I have.
Do you have
not
the VHS tape at home?
We did. Yeah. I don't know if we still do or not. That was in 84 or 85, and my son was born in 1980, so he was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. We used to watch that over and over again, you know, one of those where you know every line before it's coming. And I just always thought that was a very creative, entertaining, fun movie.
There was a rumor that the future date that they arrived was this year. And I think someone went back to the movie and looked it up, and it's not this year. But it was like, we have now reached the future date. So if you go back and watch the movie, how technologically advanced are we, like we were supposed to be, apparently?
I can't remember. Wasn't it 2020 something? I can't remember what the date was, but those were fun.
The last one was most interesting interview, and we've kind of already touched on interviewees, so maybe you get 9 questions. Do you have any questions?
My most interesting interview was Rick Pitino after the 5 overtime Notre Dame game.
Was it dangerous?
It was. I went in there thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be awful. But I had kind of a list of questions that I was ready to get through it. And I asked him the first question. I don't really remember what it was. Doesn't matter at that point. So I was just going to be, give me some reaction. And he starts out pretty good. And I'm thinking, okay, I guess we're going to get through this okay. And he talked about 30 seconds. Then he said, and that's all I'm saying. He turned and walked off.
Shut the door.
Okay. So, well, our post game is supposed to be 2 segments, roughly anywhere from 3, 4, 5 minutes each segment, whatever. But what are you going to do? So,
what do you do? Do you grab an assistant coach?
No, we just went back and did a very. Plus, on the road, we tend to shorten it anyway because we do have to get out of there quick. We've almost been left a couple of times. But the good thing about Rick is, I mean, he's passionate. He's tough after losses. You know that, but he knows it. And a few nights later, we did our weekly show from BW3s, and first thing I said to him when he walked in was, I said, Coach, I got to tell you, I had a hard time dividing up that post game into 2 segments the other night.
he just laughed, so we
got through it. So.
All right, well, thanks so much for joining us here on the Crunch Zone. I appreciate it. The Cardinal fans are crazy about you. We like learning more about the voice of the Cards, and we're going to enjoy listening to the voice of the Cards. So
please do. Tune in as much as you can. I know you want to watch, and I know the sound doesn't match up on TV, but we try to sync it up as best we can. But I can't tell you how much fun it is for me, and I'm very excited about this year just like everybody else is.
Man, it was so good to talk to Paul Rogers and listen to him reflect on 40 years of broadcasting as a Louisville fan myself, first and foremost. That was entertaining. But now we're going to move to Jonathan Blue of Blue Equity Group and see what his relationship is with the University of Louisville, him as a fan, and also about Pitino's travels this summer. He was hand-in-hand with a lot of the moving troops from the White House to the winged foot to everything else. So let's move to the Jonathan Blue interview. Jonathan, thanks for joining us here on the Crunch Zone.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
Well, a lot of people might have seen you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
I tried to grab it early many years ago when it first came out, but it's at 1, meaning the number 1 Cards fan.
There you go. Number 1 Cards fan, but it's the number 1, not...
Correct.
He already spelled it out. So you'll actually see me retweeting a lot of his stuff because this man is connected, and I'm so glad that he's joining us. And I think a lot of people in the community, especially people our age and younger, don't know enough about you and what you do for the city and for Louisville in general. So I think it's really important for them to know because you're a pretty fun guy.
I want to emulate Crumb's revenge as much as I can on Twitter and everything
else. Well, when you start wearing your masks to your board meetings,
that's right.
That's when you've reached my point. Let's just start with you a little bit. I know we'll start with sports, and you had a sports agency back in the day, and it's been sold, and you've moved on. You have a lot of businesses that you work with. So tell me a little bit about like your role with that, maybe some of the players that you represent. And obviously, it's a UofL show, so any UofL players.
Sure. We built it really from nothing. It's been a while. It was exciting to be part of it. We may go back in eventually into part of that sector. But for those who don't remember, we did the Mike Tyson fight back in 2004. We were essentially the funder for that event, and we knew nothing about sports business. We obviously were just fans our whole lives, and received a call from a local promoter, and a year later, we were able to bring him here into Freedom Hall.
Insane.
Highest grossing event in Freedom Hall history for sporting events. Billy John and Elton Joe was the highest total grossing event, but that was the number one sporting event dollar-wise in the history of that facility, 50, 60 years, and just fell in love with the ability to do something great for your community, to hopefully make money on something, and to get national attention, and in this case, international attention, to Louisville. And then from there, we said with the resurgence of the basketball program and the football programs, is there a way to possibly do something with the athletes in this community? And that's where the idea really was born and came from.
Well, who are some of the athletes that you dealt with during your time before you sold it?
So we had a great football agent named Joel Siegel. He actually represented Reggie Bush, Michael, Vic in his good and bad times. Yeah. In basketball, everybody from John Wall, they signed out of UK right when he came out of college. Sean Marion, Troy Murphy, And then in tennis, and it's nice to see this today, you know a little bit about tennis.
Absolutely.
As you've told me. I remember going to Wimbledon and seeing a 15-year-old African-American lady playing tennis. I mean, she looked, you know, tiny.
Yeah.
And last night, Sloane Stephens beat, we signed her up.
Yeah.
Became pro. She beat Sharapova. So it was a huge match last night for her. And just to see these people mature and grow up was nice. So it's nice being a part of it.
So obviously a lot of big names, UofL, not UofL. Any funny stories like dealing with players or anything like that, or funny quirks or just whatever? Just I wouldn't have thought that about this player.
I would just, you know, some of these people are so different as they're portrayed, you know, when you get to know them better. But I would just say this, you know, the agents were as quirky sometimes as we think the athletes might be.
Okay.
Great guys, legendary names, but it's a very interesting business. And you know, every day is a challenge. One of the funny stories I have, just not about an athlete, but I'll tell you a story about Bobby Petrino, who was so nice. We would go to fantasy camp with him every year, and he would always tease me as being the basketball guy. He said, "Why are you here? You're a basketball guy. Football guys are only here."
Yeah.
So it was just kind of a funny story about him.
Well, Bobby Petrino, he could bark pretty good. Hopefully he didn't intimidate you while he was doing that.
We're going to see. Yeah, he was a serious guy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember he's just very much of a disciplinarian, but we'll see how he does. It'll be fun this year watching him, too.
Now, That's where you are now with the Blue Equity, and we're going to talk some more about that. But you used to be a ball boy. That's where the whole thing started.
Yeah.
Then that's where the love for sports probably started.
I mean, we always grew up, you know, I'm older than everybody usually now. But I remember, you know, the early memories I have are of Murphy and Bridgman and Ricky Gallen and, you know, and Rick Wilson and Wesley Collins.
Some would say some of the best teams.
Yeah, I mean, Denny's, you know, heyday, and, you know, as those Final Fours happened. But, you know, I wrote him a letter back in 1979 and got to be a ball boy of all years in 1980. And
wow.
Once you fall in love with that and you're addicted, and, you know, it's a long time ago now, you probably will ask about this, but, you know, we used to have to do work. I mean, it wasn't just like wipe two things on the floor and you're done. So I can remember, you know, taking the mix, and this is a true story, and he's a good friend today, of Wiley's thumb.
Yeah.
He, you know, I don't know if people remember, you know, he started out with no plastic glove, and then he got the idea of doing a plastic glove with a fake thumb, and then he took it off eventually. There's a whole history with that, but we used to take the plaster and mix it, you know, as ball boys for the doctor who would then put it on. I mean, just amazing stories. And he, you know, of course, the legendary story where he left it on the tray that time. There was that. We would carry camera equipment everywhere. I mean, we didn't travel with the team.
Were you all paid?
No.
This is violating some child labor law, I'm pretty sure.
It was
this
great.
Was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. We got t-shirts and things like that, but that was it.
Okay. Well, t-shirts. I'm sure you can't probably work that deal with anyone in Blue Equity that you got working for you. Here's some t-shirts.
Right. Not anymore. That's the heyday.
All right. Well, how about Angel's Envy? So this is a big deal. This is opening downtown. It's called Louisville Distillery. Is that, you know, how is this all coming together?
I think that's the formal name of the company. We're an investor in the business. They came to us, and we, you know, fortunately found them. They had a lot of their funding already lined up. They're going into the old Vermont American building on East Main. They're taking a building that's basically been sitting for 25 years. They bought it from, I think, private people, and then the state helped remediate the site, and there'd be tax credits as part of it. But the good news is, you know, it's now going to connect East Main with West Main. There's going to be distilleries on West Main, and it's going to be beautiful. They're going to have racks in there. You're going to have an experience where you can see how bourbon's made. And I think, it's, you know, to focus on our strengths as a community is great.
This is going to be exciting. Now, you've been involved with a lot of the resurgence of Louisville as a downtown. I mean, can you go back and just throw a couple things that you've been involved with, some projects in downtown?
Yeah, I mean, maybe you don't remember this. I went to St. Francis High School, which is at 3rd and Broadway, and used to walk down, you know, to go home and to go to people's offices to do homework and things like that when it wasn't soccer season. And, I mean, you couldn't walk in certain places. And today, you know, the whole place is just regentrified. It's beautiful. I mean, Nulu's incredible. West Main, East Main. We've got treasures down there that are finally being exposed to the people. And we're getting some national press on it. So, just so we can just do our part. You know, again, we're down in Preston Point. But as little pieces come together, it's almost like, I guess, a mosaic. You know?
Yeah.
And it's all going to be one nice big piece eventually.
And your accent, so you're from Seneca Park. What's this accent?
You know, grew up in Seneca Park, went to school at St. Francis, went to college in Philadelphia at Penn, and then lived in New York. So I've kept that accent. For some reason, I can't get rid of it. But I can adjust when I go to the deep south.
Well, I think that's also good for people to know because I don't know. Personally, me, when I hear about someone investing in the town, you're always kind of like, where is their heart? And it's like, okay, well, they're from here. Okay, so they actually love the city, and they're you know, they run a business, of course, but they're actually trying to make where they live better, and this is where they're from.
Yeah, and that's the idea. And when I'm up east or down south, you know, traveling on business, I always try to talk up Louisville. I mean, obviously, the teams are the nicest thing to lead with, but, you know, then the things come out like Angels Envy or the things like West Main, which is the second largest cast iron district in the world behind Soho. The buildings are all metal cast iron, which some people don't realize. Mm. And the gems, you know, the things we have in this community, Louisville Slugger, a gem, the Speed Museum, a gem, the university's a gem. I mean, the list goes on and on, 21C. I mean, there's so many things you could talk about now that you couldn't do years ago, but we obviously do sports if we can.
Well, I remember that just being in college and high school, just saying we've got this really big city, but they really don't want to do anything with it. And it seems like, you know, you've been in the forefront a lot of that. We're doing something with the city, so... It's been a lot of fun watching some of that growth, and I've certainly been taking in a lot of the new things that are around. Voice Tribune. So that's another thing you're involved with.
You know, I'm involved in it. My wife runs it, and the publisher has done a great job. And we took a 60-year-old property and have tried to reinvent it with all the things that you're familiar with, electronic publishing now. There's a quarterly magazine that comes out now that actually just featured Charlie Strong on the cover with several star players with him. And you know, we've always loved that lifestyle publication space. I think it's the second or third largest newspaper in the state now, definitely in the city. And again, it's a different flavor. It's not daily news. It's lifestyle. It's, you know, the weddings, the, you know, the balls, the philanthropic events, the sports.
I get the Voice Tribune. I mean, it comes to my house, and I am surprised at how many things that are going on in the city I have no clue about. And then I see it in there. I'm like, okay, I've got to make a mental note.
We're very happy that we've taken it from a paper where people were, you know, unfortunately either passed away by the time their picture got published or they had been divorced.
Yeah.
We're now much more up to date and are doing real-time things. So it's completely redone, and it's doing very well.
And that's falling in line with Keep Louisville Weird. So I think everyone needs to check that out.
Local properties.
Yeah, because it's totally different. I remember Voice Tribune when I was a kid. I mean, first of all, I think it was mostly black and white, and I think a lot of the events were like, who cares events? I've never heard of these things, and they're just like totally out, not even in my interest. And now here we are. Yeah, it's very much what people are doing today.
And just before you leave that, little things like you talked about events. Like there's a thing called Third Thursday where they move around to some bar or club or restaurant every Third Thursday to launch that week's issue. And just bringing people together, 300 and 400 people that attend that event every week. And again, all demographics, which is nice. And those are the kind of things we're trying to do.
That's fun. All right. You know, you're involved, Board of Trustees, I believe, at the University of Louisville. And I don't know anything about what that does. To me, that's just some position out there that I think they're very influential. I have no idea what they do.
Well, that's nice.
Can you mystify and demystify what that means?
I didn't know what it was when I went to college, so I didn't understand it either. I'm still learning. But no, we're appointed by the governor, actually. It's not necessarily having anything to do with donations. You try to do your part before once you're involved. And you know, we are essentially the governing body for the university for, I don't want to say policies, but just strategic direction and things like that. There's a foundation board, which is separate, which I'm also on. And there's, of course, an athletic board. Ultimately, it all reports up, but, you know, through Jim Ramsey and the president and his staff. But, you know, we're setting direction. We're setting guidelines. You know, we don't vote on the next, you know, head of this department or anything. But it's a very solid bunch. It's a very cohesive group. We meet monthly, and then there's an annual retreat. So we're subject to public record. So most of the stuff that you can find if you do an information request.
Where do you even find the time?
Personally, to do stuff, you know.
Because there's a lot more you have going on with Blue Equity than Voice Tribune, than Angels Envy, and you're involved with Board of Trustees. I'm sure you're still trying to be a ball boy, and they're just not letting you.
They don't let me on. Well, I got close. Yeah. I'm trying to keep my seats close there. But no, we just try to do things for your community. I mean, everybody has a good cause. Everybody has a great, great desire to make this place better. And I just, again, try to do our part, be it through real estate or through gifts or through being involved with the school and other things, hospital, board of trusteeship, things like that.
That's great. Well, and I'd probably say the biggest disappointment for anyone is someone who can have a lot of influence and chooses to kind of take the lazy route. And I know that, I mean, heck, half the time I talk to you, you're not even in the country.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, again, do our part. We've got great leaders here, I think, in the community. You know, I think Greg Fisher's done a great job in his short time. And you know, obviously the president of the university is great, and he's moved us into the ACC. And by the way, people talk about sports. Everybody has to remember Duke, North Carolina. These are schools that are top-tier academic schools. So put the athletics aside, even though they're fantastic too. We're in a whole new league now economically. I'm sorry. We're in a whole new league academically. And that's even maybe even more important, although it doesn't get the attention, than athletics. Think about your students now you're going to draw from around the region. Think about the admissions. Think about the jobs that that produces once those kids graduate.
Right.
So I'm very excited.
Talent in the
that.
Community, everything. And it's good, it's great to get the blueprint, you know, because I know they'll probably offer some good guidance. And I know Louisville has done really well as far as they keep talking about the upward trajectory. So
it has.
So I think Louisville's been doing great. Now that's just going to give it some gasoline. Cooking with gas. Well, you have been traveling along a lot this summer with U of L, with Coach Pitino. I know there's been so many events. I know you went to, I think, the athletic director event where Tom Jurich was up for Hall of Fame, or Hall of Fame. He was up for Athletic Director of the Year, which sympathy vote. Looks like he got number two. There's no athletic director in history pretty much to do what he did this year. That's okay.
Right.
But some things with Pitino. I mean, what are some of the events that you've been attending? We just kind of see him on Twitter, but we don't get really a full story or what it's all about.
Yeah, I was down the street. Actually, ironically, of all nights, the New York Athletic Club Wing Foot Award was the same night as the Athletic Director's Award. So I was 10 blocks away in New York from Jurich's second place finish. And again, just he's a great guy. I mean, if you think about it, I understand someone passed away and it was a posthumous award, but if you can just imagine that will maybe never be repeated, the kind of year we talked about here, what happened here, and hopefully there'll be an encore. But he was humble even in defeat of second place. And, you know, again, I think it's just that kind of, the kind of guy he is. But, you know, Sports Business Journal does their thing, and that's fine. Sympathy vote's a great way to put it. I was excited to be at the Wing Foot event. Every year I go to that event, and it's not Louisville.
Yeah, so, we'll talk about the Wing Foot. Like, what is it?
Yeah, that goes to the winning basketball coach for the male and female men's and women's basketball championship for the NCAA Division I. And in the club, which is a private club, there's a crystal ball, which the name gets embossed below that, and there's a portrait of each coach, even if you've won it multiple times. And so, of course, Coach Cal was there last year, and I was at that event last year, and several before that, Billy Donovan several times had won that. But it was great to see, you know, Coach Pitino up there and to win it again. And ironically, he was the first winner of the award from UK when they established the award back in, I think it's 96 or
– yeah,
I think
that was, so we're holding the bookends right now with
we're
Pitino.
We're holding the bookends. Let's keep holding them.
That's right. So what, is there anything – I mean, it might be just an event like exactly what you think. Is there anything unique going on or anything else that they promote around those parties that make, man, this is such an event because – I mean, obviously the draw is the people that are up for the awards. You know, that's pretty cool to see them get that.
I think that, you know, the speeches are great. It's almost like a mini roasting, which makes it nice. But, you know, Coach Pitino will let you do that, so he'll roast everybody else for his speech.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see some of the pro players show up and some of the former players. And then Peyton Siva was there that night, which was nice. You know, the greatest event for me, quite frankly, was the White House. I mean, I had never been. I feel blessed that I got, you know, able to go, not necessarily with the team, but through some other relationships. And I just tell you, to walk in there and see your city, your state, your representatives, and then your team, I mean, it doesn't get any higher than that.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
And I think Rick, I think he's about the only coach in America that could try to hold a candle to Obama as far as taking the mic after the president. Yeah. That's a little bit of pressure.
He can speak. And it was very well done. And it was, you know, right on time. And what a beautiful place. And just one, I got just a quick funny story about that. We were leaving when it was over. And, you know, I guess there were rooms you walk in on the way out. We just said, can we go in that room and look at that? And they said, sure, go wherever you want. So we're checking
once
out.
Once you're these, in, you're in, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
We're checking out all these paintings and all these famous people. And it was just, well, what a beautiful place. And it was a great event.
Was there ever a time, or you know, or is this something that even in a thought process that Pitino's like, I want to speak, but I don't want to upstage him? I would be almost nervous about that. It's like if I was known for speaking, and Pitino does all these speaking engagements, he's very good at it, he's very sharp, he's witty, he's funny, he can speak very powerfully. But it's like the president just spoke. I need to speak one notch below the president.
I think, you know, you may afford me this, but he's just a great. I mean, he's one of the best speakers I've ever met and listened to. You may have said this to me, as I said, but there was a famous thing where they, way back when Denny had just either lost a game or won a game in the Final Four, and they interviewed Denny, and there's another guy they interviewed, and then they flashed to Patino, who had just lost in the Final Four as Providence. I think Denny was commentating. You just see the difference. And even back then, 25 years ago, he's a great speaker already.
Yeah, and I read the other day, actually, I was kind of surprised that there was a real good piece about Patino. We're coming off the path for a second. A good piece written about Patino yesterday with Jeff Goodman about Coach Bilotto and the moment that he gave Bilotto by hiring him. But in that, I couldn't help but notice he was at Boston and he was passed over for the Penn State job.
Oh, is that right?
Penn State alumni, we have Rick Pitino.
That's pretty interesting.
Are you upset about that at all?
Well, let me just say, just the last thing on the events, there is one more final thing. We have to stop living off our laurels, right? Rest on our laurels and move on. But the Hall of Fame thing is later on here in Springfield. And, you know, I've never been there. So it's going to be nice to see that and go up there for that. And when he's inducted and deserves it, obviously, winning now two schools and some other things he's obviously done and accomplished. And that'll be it. And then we got to move on. And I think you said the other day in the press, let's go because it's time to start thinking about the next ones.
That's right. Well, here's one thing, because since you're going to bump into him, and I think he sent me a message on Twitter that he might be going to this too, is Vinny Tatum, Vinny Good Times. Is he just like going crazy every single place he's going? Is he chest bumping the president? That's basically my question.
So, you know, here's a perfect story. I have friends who were in Vegas last week. I think Vinny's been four times this summer already. And I said, hey, what are you guys doing? They said, we're in Vegas. And guess who just sat down next to us at dinner at the table across? Vinny. So that's all he does, I think, is go from Louisville to Miami to Vegas.
Yeah.
The most well-traveled equipment manager in the nation.
And I've noticed in some of my videos, too, just watching him like jumping up and hugging people. So
he's great.
Yeah, I told him I've been vicariously enjoying his celebration, as we had this title. Well, tell me something else. Let me see here. We've got 10 questions. We can hit that.
Let's talk about the seats. You maybe want to hear about this one story. Everybody always asks me this question.
Yeah.
You know, what about being ran into by a player opposing or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Getting trucked as a ball boy.
So for those who don't remember, I think Louisville was like 14 and 17, and Tom established when Patino was hired floor seats at Freedom Hall. They weren't there forever. Nobody knows. And Freedom Hall, you're too young to remember, you used to be able to walk around at halftime
off
the floor because it didn't matter back then, and then they eventually closed it off. So, of course, to stand up and step up for the floor seats, it was a dream because to get that close and be part of the game, I mean, you're almost like calling plays when you're there. And so everybody says, oh, it's going to be dangerous. People will be flying all over you. The story is the very first game, the very first half, my wife and I are there. I can't remember who our guests were. It may have been our kids, but they may have been too young. And some play happens, and Reese Gaines comes over to the sidelines, dives straight into my wife.
I mean, a
million miles an hour, direct hit, game one, the first time the seats were ever established.
Yeah.
Here's the crazy part. Has not happened since.
Really?
So there's not been one incident even close since that first game, the first time.
Wouldn't it happen if they conjured up that problem themselves? If they didn't worry about it so much, it wouldn't even happen once.
It's unbelievable. But it's exciting to see. And, you know, every once in a while the referees are very nice. They'll come over and say funny things. We'll get on them every once in a while, but it's a good place.
Well, so Reese Gaines update is I think Bellarmine's hired him as a full-time assistant now. So
we wish him luck.
Yeah, moving on. Tell me, all right, so first of all, back to events. You've been to a lot of non-UofL events, okay? Mm-hmm. You're a well-traveled man. You love sports. You know, what's some of the coolest sports events that you've attended?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if this is a sporting event. I'll give you a serious one and a funny one. The funny one first. Obviously, the running of the Bulls is, I don't know if anybody's ever done that, but we went once years ago. I don't think you go when you're my age, but it was very, very fun. And it's, you know, you stay up all night and party with the guys, and then the next morning they run the Bulls. Kind of a very unique event. You see it every year on TV. A lot of people don't know. They think it's one day. It's like 7 days in a row.
Really? No, I didn't know that. I thought it was. Thought it was one day.
So that's something I've, you know, once in a lifetime I'd do that. But I you know, I would tell you that we did a lot of tennis back in the sports days a few years ago, and the French Open, just a beautiful event. It's right in the middle of Paris. It's red clay. It's misty outside, even though it's springtime in Paris. And there's just no more beautiful event. You could walk there. You can take the train there. Subway, so to speak, and it's you're so close to the players. It's so intimate. It's such an intimate environment. There's no roof, although they may build one now. And today, you may have seen the U.S. Open announced they're building a roof in New York starting in 2 years.
That's a change.
That's a really fun event. And then, you know, love basketball. I think there's just nothing like – and it's sad for me because the Big East tournament was so fun up there to be able to walk to Madison Square Garden after dinner with all the UofL fans going in. We're going to miss that. Hopefully the ACC will move back there eventually for a tournament, or at least, you know, every other year, every third year. But nothing like that arena for basketball and other things.
I had an opportunity to play on red clay once. I played tennis in college, and we traveled somewhere. It was in South Carolina. I said, eh, stupid kid. I totally could, and it's like I didn't. I'm just me and the guys, we're just going to go out and party or have some fun. It's just like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Go play on red clay. It's not Roland Garros, you know, but it was a five-star kind of resort area, so I'm sure that it was done really well, because I hear how much slower it is, you know, because I've played on, you know, your synthetic clay, and that's slipper more, a little bit more slip, a little bit more speed. The court gets a little harder, you know, the ball responds differently, but opportunity passed. I wouldn't do it now, I'll tell you that. If I had red clay now, I'd do it.
It's messy. It's a different game, though. Think about it. Does any other sport rotate on those kind of surfaces? Grass?
No. No sport does.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
I think in my favorite era of tennis was like John McEnroe and Connors and Lendl. And there was like a 15-year span where like any one of six guys could win it all. And now it's like two or three guys maybe. So I miss that parity. But, no, you're right. And I try to tell that to people all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, what other sport where if you dive for the ball, you're diving on concrete pretty much? You know, mm-hmm. like hard court right. diving. And what other sport is it where you might actually play for three straight days? Like the 72-something set we had in Wimbledon. You know, it's like there's, you know, the fitness level is really high. And you just don't see that chubby tennis player out there like you might in golf. You know,
you're absolutely right.
Story about that. I had a good friend, Michael Mather from Trinity, on my tennis team, and he tried to turn pro. And this is just to kind of get some perspective how difficult it is to turn pro in tennis. He was number one. He played number one for UofL. He transferred in from Notre Dame. And he was, I think, the fourth best American player mm-hmm. in his senior year of college. Now, in football and in basketball, you're done. You're set for life.
You're guaranteed.
It doesn't matter. You know, and you might flop. You know, it doesn't matter. They're going to prepay you for whatever you turn out to be. Mm-hmm. So in tennis, he goes out as the fourth best American player. He gets no better than 500th in the world just mm-hmm. because the amount of volume of players in Europe just sends him out. There's no college system in Europe. They just send him out right out of high school. If you're good enough to go pro, you go pro. If not, you play college tennis. So a lot of the foreign players you see in college tennis are the ones that couldn't go pro. So, and he told me, he said, and I kept getting hurt, you know, just little nagging injuries. And he said, and every 6 months, the playing field was the same age, and I got older.
Think about that.
Because another 500, you know, 18-year-olds came out, and he's like, so he tried it for 2-3 years, and he made a little money, but nothing really to sign home for. But that was like the fourth best American tennis player at that time, out of college tennis, that is. And you know, I think they should move to that kind of incentive base for all sports.
You know, you might be right. It's kind of sad that you understand tennis just for a second, because we're coming up on the U.S. Open. I mean, you know, Isner, I think, is the guy who was in the 72-70 match yeah. you talked about. But he's the highest-rated player, I think, in the U.S. now. And I don't think he's any better than 18 or something.
No.
This will be the worst ranking U.S. men's group coming into this U.S. Open, yeah. I think, in history.
And that's disappointing, because, I mean, that just loses interest for the sport. A lot of people, at least in America, you know, they're looking for that person to emulate, and
right.
and sometimes they're just going to relay a little better. All right, well, let's do some 10 questions.
10 questions.
Beer or bourbon?
Just because of our Angels investment, we're big fans of bourbon, obviously.
Favorite UofL player all time? That's not a fair question.
No, it's a fair question, because I had a very special relationship with him, and it was Derek Smith. And, you know, it was a terrible loss for all of us, and we still talk about him all the time. And he was good to me as a child and even as an adult, you know, and it just because of the personal relationship and the kind of person he was, taking nothing away from the other players, because I love them all, especially the ones we know. But he was just a special guy and taken way too soon from us.
Derek Smith spoke at my basketball camp when I was in grade school, and he did the don't do drugs speech. And it still scares me to this day. His huge, bassy, deep voice. Mm-hmm. And he said, just say no. And he said, just say. And he said no so loud that it was like echoing in the place and everyone was scared to death.
Yeah, he was a great man.
All right. Favorite restaurant to eat? So it may not be the nicest restaurant, but I'm hungry. I like to park it here and get something to eat. And I'm sure there's a lot of places, but we're going to make you say one.
My wife's kitchen, is that not legal?
No, you got to be out in the community.
We you know, we love to show people the assets here in Louisville. The Jeff Ruby's is probably the number one choice. It's such a big city experience when you go down there. But we also love Edward Lee's place, you know, down at 610. Haven't yet made it to his new place, so I'd say those two stick out.
Okay. Favorite podcast host?
Got to be you, man. You're
yeah.
the king.
Crumb's Revenge. King. Bring it on.
I only call you that from now Kay. On. You're known as that.
I'm not going to kick you out of this podcast now. If you could be pro in any sport in the world,
That's a great one. I think, you know, even though I love basketball, I think baseball guys have it the best. Here's why. I think aside from the pay, which they're usually number one, you know, they get to go to the same city four nights. They may end with a day game. They're playing the same team. They're not running from city to city. We talk about how much really they're on the field time-wise versus another sport. Yeah. I think they've got it, mate. I think they've still got the life.
Yeah. All right. Favorite team not named U of L? Could be pro, could be college.
Just being up there so much, and I have to say probably the Knicks and watching them and just – there's nothing like a Knick game, especially in the playoffs. There's just so much energy in that city. They haven't been good, unfortunately, but maybe they'll come around here in a couple of years.
I just want to remind everyone with the Knicks comment and the accent. He is from Seneca Park. We got to keep bringing this up. Favorite sports figure you've met in person? This doesn't have to be a U of L person. You've been on a lot of events. You've met a lot of people. So
I mean, can be U of L though.
Can
I? You know, aside from Derek, you know, obviously the person we used to emulate and just try to be like was Griff. You know, for so many years, and to be from here and to be from Mayo and to say I'm going to win a championship. And by the way, that was back when people didn't say it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody says I'm going to win a championship now. He to say that and do it and deliver and being from here and putting us on the map more than anyone ever has. I mean, it has to be him.
Okay. Favorite place to go for a drink when you were in college? Now, you were probably away, but when you come to Louisville, there were all sorts of bars that are not around anymore. Where was your bar?
When I came home, you're saying?
Yeah, in Louisville.
I like Patrick's.
Patrick's?
I mean, that was a place that we would go a lot.
Still there today, folks.
That one's still there. And that one's still there. And it's great, and it's got so much local flavor, and it's close to where we all live. So,
all right, let's see here. I think I've asked 9 questions. If I have to make up a 10th.
I may have to ask you a question.
All right, you can ask me. 10th question. We're finished with Crumb's Revenge.
Well, I think, just with – and I don't want to elongate the question, but it'd be good to hear your perspective. You know, it's funny with the social media today and things that are changing. I mean, you almost have to – as an athlete – now, I'm not speaking as me, but as an athlete, you almost have to say to yourself – there's a camera, literally a video camera on me, unless I'm in my bed sleeping, 24 hours a day as an athlete now. Aren't we going to continue to see more and more things? I mean, people are human. Aren't we going to see more and more things where it's just human nature, things are going to happen? What's your take on that? And again, remember what you just said it a minute ago. The kids are the same age every year that are the athletes. It's not like the athletes are getting older, and at 53, they now say, well, I finally learned what to do.
Yep.
What's your take on all that as a microcosm situation?
I think the internet has just made everybody a little bit too wise for their own good, and that's everything. That's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I think just their exposure to information is coming at an earlier age. Now, I do think they're going to get better and better and better as far as at a younger age, understand what that means and how they need to act as it relates to their exposure to the world. Mm-hmm. So we did not see that with Shane Bohannon and Kevin Ware and some other football players on Vine and on Instagram all summer long, their epic after party that lasted like 3 months. I'm surprised if Benny Goodtimes wasn't with them. So there's some players that are just going to fail there. But I do think that they're going to wisen up. It's only going to get more and more access because, it's funny. I mean, it's like I talk to people on Twitter more than I talk to a lot of my friends like on the phone anymore. It's just like it's in your hand, it's right there, there's a lot of conversation. So it's about sharing that information. Now, just being from the website, I also don't want to abuse that. There's plenty of things, and you've been exposed to a lot of stuff too where you're like, I can't share that. So there's a respect that you also try to pay, but not everyone's going to play by those rules. So you have to go to the lowest common denominator if you're an athlete and you're in high school and it's just someone's watching me and they're going to post this out. But I do think probably the people that had the hardest time with that kind of adjustment were the people when YouTube first came out. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, okay, my most embarrassing moment I've ever had in my life was hard before YouTube. But now YouTube's out, and now it's not just in my little town. It's like you can't even go to New York now. Everyone in New York knows about your embarrassing little moment.
Right.
So I think that first generation of social explosion probably had the toughest adjustment. And now they kind of know the deal a little bit, or they actually have been inoculated. So they actually – it doesn't bother them as much as we think it should as older people because we didn't have that, growing up. So
great point on that second thing too.
So I just think it's not going anywhere. It's only going to be spiral out more and more because everyone's going to kind of come up with their next new business. So I just think it's about, leadership, your parents, your coaches. It's like just make sure you all understand this is forever. I think even Obama mentioned it at the White House.
I think that's right.
To Rick Pitino, he's like, your shirtless picture is on the internet for the rest of your life. No one has it. Congratulations. So
you're right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the Crunch Zone, Jonathan, and hopefully we'll catch you back again soon. What do you say about that?
Enjoyed it very much. Happy to come in anytime. Let's have a good, fun year's come up here and see what it's like to try to do an encore.
Yeah, I think we can do a year of the Cardinal Part 2, and the sports are ready, they're locked and loaded. But you can catch us this Monday and every Monday on thecrunchzone.com or on Louisville.am. Thanks for tuning in.